bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this episode of Weird Things, a very special episode. We're in a location, a basement location.
Underground bunker.
A bunker, basically.
Pay no attention to the cord killer sign above Andrew's head.
There's that. That would be Mr. Tom Merritt, spoiler alert Merritt, as we like to call him.
Hey, welcome, Tom.
Hey.
That's Justin Robert Young.
Hey, welcome me.
To my left, if you're listening on audio, that means nothing to you, Brian Brushwood.
Hey, welcome to me too.
I'm
going to be our new intro for
me
everyone.
Me too. And I'm Andrew Main, and I have a stupid than more usual grin on my face. And we all have these grins.
Allow me to paint a picture for you, the audio listener. There are four men sitting in a basement in sunny Los Angeles, California. Three of them are in identical SpaceX collared shirts with little Velcro tags.
We got two Cape Canaverals for the two folks from Florida, and I'm wearing the McGregor location from Texas.
And then in his
Tom's still working.
I'm wearing a sporty Southern California polo.
That's a nice material.
Yeah. Perfect for the hot Southern California weather.
We went to SpaceX.
We visited SpaceX.
Yeah, it wasn't just us. We were excited enough. What originally started off as an invitation, I forgot how it cascaded.
Brian got invited. And then Brian's like, hey, I have a friend that might want to go. So Brian asks the host, says, hey, he puts me, CC's, our friend TJ at SpaceX, he CC's our new friend TJ.
Yeah.
Said, TJ invites Brian. Brian says, hey, TJ, you know, Andrew lives in LA, would love to go, but maybe possibly Andrew could go. And I'm like, I'd love to go, and Justin lives in California, and Justin would love to go.
Justin would love to.
And it just so happened that as it was scheduled, I was going to be in California for a thing on Friday. So it was like everything worked out. It worked out. There was a hole in your vacation plans.
Yep.
Andrew lives in LA.
Yep.
I was going to be here no matter what. It was just all the planets aligned.
Yeah, and then but we didn't stop there. It was like, well, you know, maybe we'll fly Penelope out because she's a big fan. She wants to be an astrobiologist when she grows up. She's fascinated by all this stuff. And it'll be cool because it'll be her first big trip and she can come out for a little bit. And then it was like, well, heck, I mean, if we're sending Penny, then it's awkward because we got to work out pickups and I might not be available. Why don't we just send Bonnie too? So Bonnie and Penny come out. And it's like, you know, Tom's here.
I just get an email out of the blue like, hey, Brian mentioned you might be interested in coming to SpaceX. And since he's bringing a dozen people anyway, I figured one more can't hurt.
Yeah, it was amazing. We all show up and TJ, by the way, who is our freaking hero, greets us with gift bags and was nice enough to spare us the awkward, like, hey, guys, can we visit the gift shop? And went ahead and got us some awesome loot, got us SpaceX model rockets, got us these T-shirts, which we are not ashamed to put on instantly and look like we are
first thing
a
we did,
band.
We got out of the basement, we stripped off our shirts and put these on.
Well, I mean, and it's we look like henchmen. We look like Elon Musk's henchmen, and I would be proud
willing
to make a judo chop from James
you
Bond.
Say,
should it ever go down like that?
You say a henchman, I say backup singers. I feel like all of us could be just like, you know, going to Mars. Schwap, schwap.
Let's get – so just so you know, like, you're not allowed to take photos inside of the facility because it's like – it's
highly secure.
Yeah, highly
because
secure.
Because they're grown-ups.
There are foreign powers who would love to be able to get,
yeah,
you
they
know.
Do. They do. They deal with the Air Force. They deal with lots of proprietary security stuff. You have to have a security clearance to work there,
yeah,
I think.
They're alien insurgency, yeah. So.
So, well, I was going to say, so I guess the best we can do is try to paint a mental picture.
Which we
to
will.
To reconstruct between the four of our memories what struck us as we went on this tour.
So you go at first, it starts off, the building is massive, the building south of the LA airport. It's a very, very massive facility, and it's next to Tesla, conveniently for Elon.
Yep.
Actually, right next to the Hawthorne Airport, which I didn't know was a thing.
Yeah,
oh, I didn't know that.
So
I always thought, why does Tesla have their own airport? That's amazing.
Yeah, useful. Yeah, it's a converted hangar. When you go inside of the SpaceX facility, you've got the lobby, which is pretty awesome. And then when you go through there, one of the first things you see is you see a engine, one of the Falcon 9 engines, and it's this cool, beautiful one. It says serial number one, not for flight.
Yeah, like in all caps. Like, seriously, bro. You might be thinking about just attaching this to your car and flying. Don't do it.
Then he points us down to one corridor, and beyond that is a big, huge area of office of cubicles and desks. We can't go there, and you see rockets and cool stuff sitting on desks and displays.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It's massive. And he explains, like, this is the engineering zone one. It's one of three. He says, you see that right there? Every floor above this is an identical copy of that. And we still don't have enough room for all the engineers.
Yeah. Then we go through the magic doors, right?
Wait, forget the picture of Mars.
That was struck me.
Yeah, that's the real big thing is that they have two pictures side by side of Mars, and you don't even notice it. You look at it, you see a red planet.
You see Mars,
See what you would think to be Earth.
Yeah,
except for that all the continent shapes. And the water areas.
That's not Africa.
They all kind of match up exactly with Mars.
Yeah.
Like, that was a full-on goosebumps experience where it's like, you know, we talk about like, oh, well, they clearly want to go to Mars. But it's like, no, you don't understand. When you go to work, you pass a thousand-year vision of what they plan for the future. It's
terraform Mars.
It's inspiring. I mean, it's like it got me super fired up.
It's hard to really put into words how much they are gearing toward that. I mean, like, it is a singular kind of statement. And TJ was nice enough to give us a lot of swag, right?
Yeah.
Shirts were one of them. We got the amazing Falcon 9 model rockets.
Mm-hmm.
And we got cups that say Occupy Mars. Right?
Yes.
And did you see the guys walking around with T-shirts?
Occupy Mars. Yeah.
Now, all I can think of is so much of my life, and Brian, working as a magician, when you do corporate gigs, you go to these sales conferences and everything, and you see they hand out cups very much like that are like, number one this year.
Yeah.
Like,
second quarter champs.
I know. Like the Whopper will be the number one burger in America. Like, King Whopper. Like, there's like all these corporate mission statements, and that's what they do because they want to fire up their troops. This was exactly that, and it was in that, like, it wasn't because it was amazing. What struck to me is that it was so much like every other company.
It was so matter of fact. It was striking in its boringness. And by the way, when we say pictures, we don't mean like on the wall they hung up a couple of inspirational posters, although that would be hilarious to have
terraformational Mars. Like, yes, posters.
Exactly.
Like,
there's a kitty cat on Mars.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Terraformed that bitch.
Yeah. But like these were giant. I would say, 9 foot by 9 foot, like taller than you. You know, it's like you are looking at Mars and you're looking at what could be the future of Mars that we can make happen.
And I want to qualify, like, when we talk about, like, other companies would have this sort of stuff, the people here were wearing and living and breathing this rather than it being something forced on them. This was something they actually, you could talk to when we talked to TJ. It's like, do you want to go to Mars? Absolutely. I mean, it's why he's there. I mean, it was just this.
What struck me when TJ said that was not like, someday, you know, Mars is a great goal. It's like, no, all of this is meant to get us to Mars. Like,
yeah.
His idea
that's
was,
the goal.
I really just hope that I live long enough that me and my family can go.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Like, that was it. And
without irony or jokiness or anything.
So let's.
And this is a guy who's in a place where they're making things that could do that.
So let's get into the actual. So there.
We step onto the.
So, like, there's some cool, like, in-joke stuff.
Wait, well, before we go. Yeah. So everything, to set the scene, everything is corporate. This could be any environment. You know, we know we're at SpaceX, but we don't, you know, you don't really feel it until you walk through that first door.
Yeah, and then he points us through the elevator, and you look through the elevator, and beyond the glass elevator on the other side of the glass window, Iron Man is staring out at you. You know, full-scale Iron Man and a Cylon.
Centurion.
Yeah.
With Cylon Centurion.
With the red dot laser going back and forth. Yeah.
Also, when you look down at the base underneath Iron Man, you see a little signature, John Favreau.
Now, that if you turn and back, you see this big computing facility there. and Cyberdyne Systems.
Which is hilarious because it is their network cage, right? That's their server room.
Yeah.
And then a big Cyberdyne Systems. Not funny, guys.
Yeah. I'm all for it, personally. So we're laughing at this, and then we take a few steps forward onto the floor, and we all have this holy crap moment. And I've seen, you know, we've all seen, like, webcasts and stuff up there where you have the Dragon capsule, the first one that ever went into orbit, up there, and you can see that. And that's amazing. That's absolutely stunning to see this piece of space hardware. But the thing that just made me go, holy crap, was we turned to our right, and standing before us, three stories tall, okay, larger than a house, is one landing leg for the Falcon 9.
Which, by the way, if it had not been explained to us, I do not know if I would have
ever put it together.
Yeah, it just would have kind of looked like modern art, like modern architecture.
Oh, I got excited because, I mean, just having watched, like, all the videos and seeing the thing, and you know that it's big. You don't appreciate how big it is until you just walk through and you see this.
Well, especially because on the context of the rocket, it looks like how, man, you have to land very precisely for those tiny little feet to support it when it gets down there.
You can't believe those tiny little feet. What's that thing?
And then
they're
you
not
see
tiny
it.
Little feet.
Well, and it's amazing, and you walk over and you touch it, and you notice that the entire thing is made of woven carbon fiber, and it is a truly transformative experience to put everything in a touch it, hold it in front of your context.
And I said, the thing that was special was to think about is that you go to the Smithsonian, you see the Smithsonian Museum, you go to NASA, you go to Canaveral, you go to all these places, you can see rockets, you can see amazing parts of space history. You will not see a landing leg. You will not see a landing leg. You know, other than a replica one or something, maybe on a lunar lander, but this is an actual landing leg for a terrestrial rocket to come back down that has been put onto rockets that they are going to probably by end of this year use for a hard landing on a barge or some other solid surface. And it's a real thing. It's not we talked about there's other places you go visit that are, you know, like Blue Origin, which sounds like they're doing interesting things. You're supposed to walk in there and they have this Jules Verne style rocket, this fantasy rocket, which sounds amazing. You walk into SpaceX and the first thing you see
is functional ship that went to space.
Yeah, an actual prototype landing leg that's a model.
That they are doing now.
That's on rockets that have been into space,
Yeah, their Jules Verne moment is like, we got a Tony Stark thing here.
That's fun. That's back there because we got the real stuff right here. Right.
Yeah. Well, and so when you walk in, again, that was the most magical transformation moment to take what I thought was architecture and turns out as functional stuff.
That was the Jurassic Park moment.
Yeah. So
they do move in herds.
But I was just hypnotized by seeing that Dragon capsule, and they explained that this is the Dragon capsule that delivered the first payload to the International Space Station, fully recovered, and it's got the scored marks
Millennium
on
Falcon.
The side.
Looks like the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. It really does. Yeah. Well, and
carbon scoring.
Did I hear correct? Is that the exact rocket that you guys went watched go up?
I saw that one live. Yeah, I saw that one.
That is amazing.
Andrew and Molly Wood were there in Cape Canaveral, and me and Tom were in the brick house doing like a live.
We did a live Weird Things Twit collaboration broadcast.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
And it was all of a sudden it's like, hello, old friend.
Yeah.
It's just hanging there cafeteria.
As soon as that context collapsed, I was like, wow, you saw it in person and we were there watching you seeing it in person, and now there it is and it's been in space.
Now it's this artifact. Yeah.
This is the one of the fascinating things for me was to try to experience all this through Penny's eyes, because she's 10 years old and she's interested in stuff, but she's a kid and she doesn't necessarily have context.
She did a sleepover at NASA. Right?
This is
a thing that she very much enjoyed.
Yeah, so she went to one of the things at NASA's. They show the actual mission control and all that stuff. That was very cool for her. But it's interesting to see stuff through the kid's eyes, because she doesn't know what she can and can't comment on, because we're in this area having this moment. We're like, that's the Dragon capsule. She's like, oh, wow, that's great. This is the landing. Oh, that's great. And then she's like, that's the same Coke machine they have at the so-and-so place. Like, what are those
it's
fancy?
Really awesome Coke machine. Oh, yeah.
The ones that have at, like, Five Guys or something where you can, like, make a cherry Coke.
Yeah. Exactly. But it was like, at the moment, I was like, oh, I hope this resonates with her. You know, and I didn't know how much of this, you know, she was really following and understanding. But it was really cool for us to have the excuse of explaining things to a 10-year-old.
Yes.
No, Penny, explain to her what the hell all this is.
Yeah. We all obviously know rocket science.
Yeah.
Where do the batteries go?
This well, goes to upspace, right? You know, the space above us.
Explain it so Penny can understand. Yeah.
So how many carburetors on this thing?
Yeah. There were a couple of great moments with Penny, though, and one was we were watching the gantries come over, right?
Which
and
is massive.
It starts out as one of those moments where we're like, yeah, that's impressive, the gantries. So you might see over, that in other places.
They're building rockets, which are big. And you got to get a rocket from one part of the factory floor to another part of the factory floor. Rocket engines, all you see, like, just like give you an example, you see a cluster of 9 engines built. I have to get you out there, all the way out there. 9 engines, okay? 9 engines built together, and like, this is huge. And they're like, how did they get this thing around? And then you hear, and you look up above, and you see the gantry, the crane that moves back and forth and side by side.
And that's catching Penny's attention.
Well,
like,
it
that's
caught
a
my
big,
attention
impressive
because
thing.
It's a big movement. You're seeing the size of a building just sort of pass over you.
It's the kind of thing, though, that I bet some people are like, yeah, I don't work at SpaceX, but I work in this big factory, and we have those same kinds of things. The clincher moment is when the guys controlling it walk by with their wireless controllers.
And by the way,
TJ,
that's weird because they're just walking along, and it's like you expect somebody to be sitting there, you know, pulling giant levers. It's two guys. I mean, you know, they're very professional and stuff.
Of course.
But they do this all the time, so they just have what looks like a couple of RC remotes.
Yeah. Well, and you need to watch it go to make sure that it's, you know, you keep a line of sight on it, and he's just kind of like sort of casually just like pushing the hammer down to move it from one side to the other. But he got a kick out. As soon as he saw Penny, he's like,
come here.
You want to make it go?
So she walks over, and it was this awesome moment where all of us felt the electricity. There's 7 or 6 grown people watching Penelope reach out with a tentative finger, and then she flips the switch and holds it down, and above us the sky moves.
And you can see her eyes going, I'm doing that.
It was utterly adorable.
So I wanted to be her right
now. To give you an example of the factory floor, so you look there and you see – I described, like, in the center, they're working on these engines. You see this big, massive engine structure. Off to the left, there's a room where they make the carbon fiber, or they'll spin the aluminum to make the big cylinders. You're literally seeing giant pieces of rocket all over this place. You go further in, you see where they're working on the Dragon capsule. You see, like, a body for this. And, you know, as it's in different stages of construction, in the far back, there's a paint booth. How do you paint one of these things? You know, you can't fit the whole rocket into a paint booth. So basically, you slide the rocket through the paint booth.
And what was amazing was there was 2 of them side by side. The first one was the first section. And everything we had seen on the rockets was in sections. But behind it was a second rocket that had been painted. And there was this moment that both Andrew and I both had. We're like, oh, this is a very big section of – or this is a very big rocket. Or whatever, and then we both caught the behind to the left and just saw how it just keeps on going forever.
No, I mean they are gigantic. They're big enough to make those 2.5 story legs.
Yeah,
look
yeah.
like tiny little nubs. Yeah. That I can't believe it can support that weight.
He showed us the fairing that, like, when they don't put the Dragon capsule on top, when they do payloads, satellite payloads, what they put that inside of, and it's you know, we could have parked all of our cars inside of there.
We could
send our cars to space.
With half of one of those, we could make it across the Atlantic.
Yeah.
I mean,
by the way, Brian might send his car to space because the way he was looking at that Tesla that we stopped in afterwards.
Oh, jeez. Don't even give me sorry. We'll wrap up with that.
Here was what blew me away. And again, it was every element was being able to touch it back to something very normal and very everyday, that the people there were so young. Like, I guess, like, I just kind of imagine the people that are making this kind of breakthrough in terms of space and rocket technology to be old wizards, you know, and literally with robes and hats, and
I think your line was like, I have not seen a single gray follicle
except for my own face. and yet it's just a bunch of guys that would not look out of place, and I don't mean this in any kind of way other than to paint a mental picture, but as people who would fix cars or other kind of physical...
At a motorcycle shop, like a high-end... Yeah.
Well,
like,
and there's two...
It was a young...
Yeah, and also we're on the floor side and not the engineering design. Yes. We're on the floor side, not the engineering design side. And so there is a cultural difference between the two, but yes. you know, it was.
So we also another amazing moment was as we're getting near the end. I hear Penny go, and then I look, and Penelope's over there, and I realize that what I thought was a girlish scream from Penelope was from Andrew as they saw the 3D printing facility.
The laser.
Oh my god!
So we're walking over. We're looking at the Falcon capsule. We're impressive and amazing. And I look over and I see a video screen, and I see a laser hitting like this bright light, making this ring, and I'm like, this is their 3D printing system they make rocket parts out of, and right next to it, through the windows, you can see these big 3D, this is the form of printing where they use powdered metal and a laser hits and melts it, and you can actually see this machine in operation because they're making a part over the weekend, and it's just the idea that they're 3D printing rocket parts inside of there, and so it was a childish scream of delight.
What's amazing was actually they had, you know, because obviously they're smart enough to know that idiots like us will come through from time to time. They made sure to have a series of knickknacks that have been 3D printed, and some of them I'm sure were functional parts, but some of them, like one, appeared to be just a way to show off the precision.
I looked right by it, and it looked like a handle, and it says, look between arrows. And so everybody else looked at it. I'm like, everybody else said, I didn't do it. And you pick it up, and it's a super, super, super fine, precise, kind of like a honeycomb that you can see right through. The gaps on it are super tiny.
Now, this is solid.
Solid metal. Solid metal.
Any other angle, you cannot see those holes. You have to hold it just right and up to the light.
Just right up to the light, and you can see it shining through clearly.
Yeah.
Like, that's how fine it is.
And so many holes that that the whole thing, I mean, I guess it really was kind of a honeycomb. When you say honeycomb shape, though, it makes you think that the gaps are bigger. Like, it was it looked like it was solid metal all the way through, except for, as if to show off and give you the middle finger, they drilled these ultra-precise
And that allows you to do things like, if you want to have a metal wall, solid wall, and have a material in between, if you want to do layering. And so, like, when you do 3D printing,
heat management.
Yeah, in 3D printing, you have an interior layer, like a strength layer, a support layer, and so it allows you to do that. But also you look at that and you go, there's no other way to make this.
Yeah.
There's no other way you couldn't pull that out of a mold. You couldn't do that any other way. The only way to make this is through 3D printing. And when you start thinking, when you have the engineering capabilities to make things you could not make before, which now...
Well, and that's that sort of like blue sky, like you know, nothing's on the, you know, everything's on the table. Nothing is just because it's been done before has to be the way that this is done. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to find out, you know, what little we could from the outside, to find out which parts still make sense to make out of aluminum, which parts make sense to make out of carbon fiber. Oh, yeah. He's out of here.
I noticed that the laser printers ran on Windows XP.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, there's a couple XP machines, a couple 7 machines, right?
Well, yeah, there was a design machine when we were looking at the, I think it was the Interstage, where I was like, oh, yeah, that's Windows 7, smart.
Yeah.
They have, you know, but then when I was like, those are XP. I'm pretty sure those are XP buttons on the green screen. Like, those aren't networked, are they? But you know that you know, and actually, I didn't get any confirmation. I could be wrong, but you know that they are keeping things at the minimum expenditure.
Yeah.
If you have a non-network machine and all it needs to do is reliably do a laser printer, why mess with it?
Well, mm-hmm. And the biggest thing that we heard from TJ, and TJ works on a lot of the structural stuff, is that. And again, this is not anything that's new to anybody, but it's just amazing to kind of hear it like somebody is talking about their job and not in the way that we just sort of look at it from the outside, about how few people they want to keep between the design and the physical engineers.
Right.
You know? And that it's halfway through something, there'll be somebody will run down into the shop and be like, no,
we've got a better idea.
We're not doing that. Yeah.
And it's like, if you think of, like, what is the difference between where space, you know, rocket exploration and development was pre-SpaceX, and to the fact that, again, this is only 13 years old, right?
Yeah.
This whole, that they are at, we're going to land a rocket and reuse it at 13 years in.
Yeah.
It's because that doesn't require four forms in triplicate and somebody to get mad because now you're not going to use a part from Oklahoma when the Oklahoma senator supported the bill that got you the money for that particular project.
Yeah, well, and also, you know, when you have the ability, like Elon Musk, to just say, for example, you know, we were looking at that Dragon capsule, the one that had done the first resupply, and I was like, man, I just don't understand why bother to put Windows on it. And the answer was, is because, like, well, eventually this is going to take people, so let's start now. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of that. A lot of, you know, for example, in the most recent launch, when they didn't, there was no need to try to gently land the rocket in the middle of the ocean, but it's like it's going up anyway, and this is what we want to do. Let's go ahead and see if we can land it.
I just got a Google News alert, and I had not seen this footage yet. This was footage of the last landing from a chase plane.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
This is in the water?
This is, yeah. So, anyway, I'm just going to – it's a – if you go, I think, probably on the SpaceX YouTube feed, it's only a 52-second video, but they actually had a camera on board. So they had a camera on the rocket itself, and you could see this sort of – you know, you could see sort of basically the reentry and the legs pop out. And so this is actually video, which SpaceX has just released on their YouTube channel.
Oh, my gosh. You can see it gently coming down towards the ocean. Yeah. Landing.
So this is not on the rocket. This is a plane observing the rocket as it's coming in and doing this reentry at this angle thing.
Oh, my God.
Now, and you understand, now that we've seen how big this thing is, and now you see the touchdown in the water.
And so, yeah, you can just see the gigantic vapor cloud as it slowly, and man, tell you what, I bet you the guy who's in that plane is just kind of really wishing he would have kept it right there. But, yeah, no, it's, I mean, it, from what you see, it looks like you would see in Cloverfield or something like that, where it's like the impossible from a distance,
yeah,
like trying to keep a camera on it. And
this is a 10-story building. It's a 10-story building that you're watching land. And that was the thing that just got me again, looking at that leg and knowing how big the rest of the rocket is and just watching that footage right now where you see this thing land and you have no sense of scale. And that gave me just a sense of scale. And it was just jaw-dropping.
Yeah, it was highly transformative. A few surprises. So we found out, I don't think he told us any unknown technical details, right?
We didn't have to. They would have made us.
Okay. No, he was talking about for internal heat insulation. You know, it's the rules are different. If you know, I forgot what he called it, but the part that is attached to the top of the first stage.
Pika X.
Pika X is the material that you put on there for the heat management for the reentry. But internally, the components like there's normally not components in there.
It was like interstitial or interterm.
Yeah, there's a segment that joins the first stage to the second stage.
The interstage?
Interstage, there you go. And normally it's there just to join the one piece to the other, but they are repurposing, you know, they're enhancing it so that this is now where the brains of relanding the first stage are going to be, and it has to have
its two functions are, in SpaceX's world, to – all that, like, when they talk about, like, oh, well, we landed it, and we may or may not have great video of it, but we have a ton of data. It's all coming from that interstage.
Right. Well, and I may have the wrong part in here, and this is the other part, is we all had to learn a lot of space rocketry information real fast. But he was talking about internally, when you plan to re-land parts, suddenly it becomes important to have heat management for a lot of this stuff internally, because normally there's not these gizmos that you have to protect for it. So he was talking about how internally they use cork. And that is apparently affecting the world supply of cork.
I thought the cork was on the outside.
Yeah,
oh, was it on outside? The outside? I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay, then that's what it is. But I know that the reason was because when you want to bring it back, you have to protect more stuff.
He explained it like a brake pad. The cork, you think like cork for a heat shield? He's like, yeah, so part of it burns off. Not all of it burns off because it's super dense cork.
Right.
But it's made from the same material that your champagne cork is made. It's just not that loose. And so like a brake pad, it burns off before it actually hits the material, and then they can just scrape it off and apply some more. But like you said, yeah, the cork supply has become very scarce because
of the
amount they need.
That's why you're twisting off those wine caps, folks. That's right. You know?
Then what? I guess was that it for the space? We sat and had a meal, and man, cannot thank TJ enough.
Agree with the thanks to TJ. He was a consummate host, great at explaining and being like, yeah, you know, I don't really know the answer, but I figure out where to find it for you. Like, just fantastic at handling all of our crazy questions from here and there.
I can say the couple things that. I think were fun for us to learn was that in talking about company culture, everybody is very much kind of on the same page. You know, there's you got the sense, or at least I did, that there is this sort of binding mission. It is to Mars. Like, everybody's building to that goal. And when you have that, when there is a launch, especially big important ones, apparently everybody drops what they're doing and gathers around. We saw their mission control room.
Which, by the way, it was very clean, looked exactly like a LAN party.
Yes.
If you've been to QuakeCon, you've seen...
you have seen the SpaceX mission control.
A bunch of Logitech keyboards and Samsung monitors.
Right.
Yeah.
And apparently Elon is... that's like the new thing. It's like, all right, guys, we put monitors at your stations. You can watch the launch from your stations.
While you're working.
But, yeah, while you're working.
You do work. Because they want to do so many launches per year. You know,
12 launches a year.
Yeah. And I guess they did nine, or they have done, or they will do nine this year. And it's not far away. And I guess that's really what I took away, was that this is now. This is not 5 years from now. Or it's not the way that when we say, like, oh, well, you know, in 15 to 20 years, we might as well be saying in 100, right? Like,
yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're assuming things happen whenever we push that kind of time scale out. When we say 5 years for SpaceX, we're talking about some real ass, the next person to be the president will likely see this kind of 5 years.
They're looking at it by the end of this year, on the factory floor, presumably maybe there, or McGregor or whatever, they're going to have a whole first stage rocket engine that went into space and is now brought back to the factory to be taken apart, assembled, and, you know, analyzed, and to see how this thing works. And that's a thing to think about, you know. Just
that was one of the other things that was really neat, was once there are things you don't think to ask until you're looking at 10 stories of rocket laid out in front of you, like, well, you build it here, then what? You
how
know,
do you get it to Cape Canaveral anyway.
And apparently, the answer is you just drive it down I-10.
Well, first time I ever saw the factory, I picked up a friend from the airport, the LAX airport, a little ways north of there, and drove them down. And we just drove around the factory, and we go along the back, and we see this large flatbed trailer parked in the street on the side, and the gates are open, and there they have a big capsule, was wrapped in plastic, and everything was getting ready to be loaded onto there. And that was one of those moments you're like, huh.
Yeah.
Bubble wrapped,
yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you what, amazing. Like, with the increase, and especially with the reusability, you know, once we get to the reusable stage and you got, like, you know, I don't know, 20 different reusable craft or whatever, I would imagine that it will be an increasingly real headache as you drive across America, like, oh, another rocket. Take it again, because they have to have police escorts and all that stuff.
I think they're making plans for...
for ways to get around.
They're doing it in the Texas facility and other stuff.
They drive mostly at night too. So
yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's all very well thought out.
But I mean, it's a fascinating logistical.
But
problem.
like
GQ Eisenhower.
Like we were
right?
talking. Like, listen, you're gonna pull this bad boy off to the Flying J, and, you know, like, catch a shower in the truck stop showers.
Well,
right?
It's like, do you remember the first time you drove past a truck towing one of those windmill propellers?
Yeah.
You know, it's like that was an extraordinary thing, and now it's just like, there's another one. Mm-hmm. And like the fact that couldn't be a future problem, that's a very good problem to have with it. Rockets.
Well, it's amazing to see the momentum. It's amazing, and that's what I kind of felt. You kind of just sort of almost like feel like the wind in your hair of, like, this is moving. This is like for at a speed that we haven't seen since the space race. There's like real amazing game changing technology. Not soon, now,
right
in front of us.
Right,
we can smell it.
Yeah, as we're walking out, I realized, like, this is a Saturday.
Yeah.
And there's guys in there moving the interstage that they were working out down the hall past us. There's guys out there welding stages together, welding the first stage together. You know, this work does not stop. This is a place where it is actually happening. I was in the Johnson Space Center on a Saturday. Granted, this was like 1990, I think, on spring break. There are a few people around, but you didn't get that same feeling.
What a wild spring break for you, Mary.
Yeah, I know how to spend them. But the thing that really caught my eye, or caught my brain, I guess, on the way out. On the way in, I'd been so excited by that Tony Stark and the Centurion. I was like, that's hilarious. That's great. Look at that. You know, this is a freaking movie prop. On the way out, I was like, that's make-believe.
Yeah, that's classic.
It wasn't that I didn't
trash.
Like
yeah.
it anymore.
Yeah.
It was like, that is so much less impressive now, mm-hmm. after seeing that stuff that's really either been in space or on its way.
It's cool, too, is like there was a group of kids being let in there as we were leaving. And the idea that there are our field trips are this was going to see a program that had been around for 20 years and was sort of on its decline. And we'd already had like, you know,
it also kind of had like a PR routine that they knew how to do.
And a shuttle disaster and stuff. Yeah. And you get these kids are walking in and the first thing they get to see is this is the landing leg. The rockets have landing legs now. This is for them. Like, this is normal. Rockets have landing legs, kids.
By the way, and I don't know if this is the being a father side of things, but did you guys notice that entire group was all girls?
No, I hadn't.
It was they were all you know, girls around Penny's age, and it's like I just love, you know, I don't think it's great to encourage one job or another based on gender in general, but I do think it's great that now more than at any point in all of human history, you know, for the hard sciences, that it is an open playing field or more open than it's ever been.
And it's all about whether or not you want to make something impossible happen, and the fact that it is becoming increasingly less impossible and increasingly more just some stuff that happens in a warehouse in Hawthorne.
Yeah.
You know? Like
right down from the Wendy's.
Right, I mean, it's right next to the Wendy's, right?
Yeah. There was a really one more sweet moment on the way out. You know, Penny was really good about obeying all the rules, like, you know, do not touch, and this is serious, and you have to do X, Y, and Z. And there was, you know, obviously TJ, because he works there, there are things he is allowed to touch and so on. And there was this brief moment where as they're sort of walking by a random engine part, he's like, Penny. Penny walks over and he grabs her hand and sticks it.
It was the interstage. So they're rolling the interstage. This is something that will be connected to the first stage of a rocket that will go to space. And she's very, very good. And TJ just grabs her hand just like paint brushes it over the interstage.
Yeah, man, I am so glad. Like, I had no idea what to expect. I just knew that there was an exciting opportunity, and I figured no matter what, it'll be fun to spend a couple extra days. And yes, it's expensive to fly out two people just for one day, but I am so thrilled that we did. I can't wait to hear everything from her perspective, you know, over the next several years.
I imagine there's a couple memories made in her brain today that will not leave her.
Yeah. One memory that will not leave my brain is seeing the Model X in the
Model X.
Well, I mean, the outside, like when you said the clay model,
I was expecting literally clay. Yeah,
pottery.
So we went over to the Tesla factory right next door, the design studio.
And they have there in the front, and you know, it's like the Model S. Even if I could afford it, even if you know all the things, it's like it's not practical for me and the family. It's like I'd never be able to use it for the things.
It's a sportier car.
Yeah, it's like that's what midlife crisis Brian would get. Model X looks like something Brian with the family would get, and it's like wow.
So yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen it, go ahead and Google it right now.
So if you have six daughters, you can get a Model X.
Well, and I think that's the crazy part. I mean, it's stupid expensive. How much is it?
I don't even know.
Like mid-50s. Okay. Which again, it's like a minivan will run you 45.
Sure.
So it's like, it's stupid expensive, but not that stupid.
Only a little more stupid.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to do a pick, and I have a recommendation for everybody listening.
Yeah.
All right, my pick is SpaceX. I love them. I want them to be here forever and take me to space.
I continue to watch The Leftovers, and we'll talk about it more on the show. But I'm starting to really dig The Leftovers, especially today. This was another episode where Bonnie, you know, joined in, so I found myself explaining what had happened previously, and again, I start to see how it's coming together. So I'll say The Leftovers, and watched the first episode of Fargo, and I'm all in on Fargo. It's too grisly for Bonnie, but it's like I'm going to watch all of these.
The circumferential friction welding, I think, is my
pick.
Nice.
That was nice.
Oh, my God. I forgot all about that.
A machine that on
friction
the inside.
Stir welding, sir.
Thank you for the proper name. I was trying to remember it. Inside and outside, just like quickly rubbing.
Grinding.
Really fast.
Yeah.
To create
there are
a weld.
Amazing things. Yeah. There was a giant robotic arm underneath the fairing that had this special huge loop around it. So that's for measuring the tolerance of the fairing and to be able to inspect every square inch. There's all this amazing stuff. Here's what I suggest to you, listening here, maybe a little jealous, you should be. If you go to YouTube and you type in Elon Musk SpaceX factory tour, you can actually find a video of Elon Musk giving a tour of the SpaceX factory. This is from a few years ago, but you get to see a lot of what we saw, and you get to see his enthusiasm for explaining what's going on there. It's really worth watching. It's like 40 minutes or something, but it's fascinating. So Elon Musk, SpaceX factory tour.
Wow. I cannot believe what an amazing time this has been. This, it exceeded all my expectations and hopes. It was great as we walked past Dragon capsules, just kind of like peek in, and I don't know, like it felt was so real and just right there.
I'm not going to say it's been weird. I'm going to say it's been awesome. Thank you to SpaceX for making this possible. Thanks for TJ to arranging it. We're
Good. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I'm never going to take off this shirt. And it's across the room here now, but I just got a cardboard coffee cup from SpaceX with the SpaceX logo. I'm just never going to do
that. Just a disposable coffee cup from the kitchen,
just
because, right?
I'm like, I just came from SpaceX.
I just came from the design room. We're working on some stuff.
I can't say where I came from.
Yeah. See, I'd wear this shirt in public, but then I don't want to have to be like, oh, you work for SpaceX? No.
No. I just have a TV show.
I mean, I work for them in the broader sense of promoting what they do my own. Yeah,
no way, man. SpaceX works for me. That's what you got to say. Oh, man. Thank you guys for all showing up, and thank you to TJ.
Woo!
It's been awesome.